Cheryl. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cheryl.
Is this going to pick me up because I'm little?
Oh, yeah, it picks you up. Okay. I'm just getting out of your way here.
Okay. All right. My sobriety date is July 27th, 1996. And I grew up in an alcoholic family, extended family as well, but we didn't. I didn't really find that out until later. There was always alcohol around in my family and in the household, of course. My mom was an active alcoholic when I was a kid. And I remember seeing her spiral down in her illness. And it got to the point, the last few years before her recovery, it got to the point where I was just disgusted with her, embarrassed to be around her. And she was not somebody that I looked up to at all. In fact, you know, I looked down on her, and I just was, you know, I felt superior to my mom. She was, and it didn't help that I was a teenager at that time, though. I think probably a lot of teenagers have that attitude. But I remember very distinctly being, you know, so disgusted by her. And it was a big secret. My dad, I grew up in Michigan, and we were in Saginaw, Michigan. My dad was a prominent surgeon in the community. So we had this front that we were this, you know, this perfect family in this beautiful home with, you know, and, but then you came behind the doors, and it was a different story. It was chaos. It was chaos within the people. It was chaos in the house, too. It was, you know, very cluttery and dirty, and, you know, and I remember my dad being so mad that my mom couldn't pull it together and keep the household up the way that she should. And there was a lot of conflict between them about the drinking. As I grew older, maybe fifth grade or so, it became, I realized why my mom was acting the way she was. I noticed that she was drinking. And I saw the bottles under the sink. And I knew that when we went to the store, when we went to the grocery store, she had a Tupperware cup. And she'd fill that up with, gosh, I don't remember even the name of the stuff. But she filled it up with liquor before we would go shopping. And the smell of it just really, really turned me off. I think, you know, I just had a flashback of when I was, my mom had been drinking for, even when we were little, and I remember one of my earliest memories was when I was probably about 2 or 3, and my mom had put us to bed, and looking back now, I was craving attention. I had 4 brothers, and I didn't have a lot of private time with my mom. And I remember laying in bed and waiting until it was a reasonable amount of time before I could go out and say, tell my mom that I couldn't sleep. And I would sit in her lap, and she would rock, and she'd sing to me. But I remember needing to move my head around so that I couldn't smell the alcohol. I didn't know at that time that it was alcohol, but I didn't like the smell. And I remember wanting to be in her arms and having just her attention. The drinking was even then. And drinking in private, I'm sure, because we had all gone to bed. My dad was, always at the hospital. And so she drank alone. I can relate to that. So I don't know. I just thought about that when I was thinking about my childhood and how, it was chaotic on the inside. And I know for me, when I was drinking and using, my world was very small. And I didn't realize it, but my world revolved around alcohol. And I shut out a lot of possibilities, a lot of options, because there wasn't alcohol, or these people didn't drink, so they weren't as cool, and I wouldn't hang around them. And so I missed out on a whole lot. Just because of the priority of alcohol. So I'm kind of jumping around, but going back to when I was a kid, and I found out that, or I figured it out, that my mom was drinking. And I thought I was the only one in the family who knew about this. And it was my responsibility to do something about it. And I remember going to my dad when he was home and pulling him aside and telling him that, mom's drinking and I think she should stop. I think you need to tell her to stop. And he, completely out of the blue, he stood up and he says, "Don't tell me, you tell your mother." And he's like, "Mariora, Mariora, come up here." So she comes up and he says, "Tell her what you just said." And I had no intention of telling her. But I do remember going in their bathroom for privacy. They had a little dressing room in there, and asking her, "Please stop drinking." And my mom told me later that she thought this was a big secret that she had, and maybe her husband, my dad, knew. But us kids did not know. She didn't think. And so it was a big shock to her that that we knew. And she says later on that that was the seed that was planted for her years later. But that was the seed that helped her to open her eyes to her addiction and give her the courage to get sober. And I also remember telling my older brother that, I don't know if this was before or after, I was telling him that, we need to do something about mom. She's drinking. And he says, "Well, I know, and I'm not going to do anything that's, and he was mad, and he did not want to do anything. I guess he wanted to bury his head in the sand and pretend that it wasn't there. And then I suppose, maybe it'll go away if I don't look at it. Maybe it'll just take care of itself. But I felt like I needed to keep it together. I needed to pull the family together. It was my responsibility. When at the very end, I suppose it was my responsibility. to pull the house together and to keep things functioning. Because I remember making spaghetti and needing to stand on the on a chair to reach the burner to to fry up the beef for the sauce. And so, yeah, cooking for the family. When I was little enough to need a chair to stand on to reach the top of the stove. So I don't know what it was. I'm sure my mom has done some talks before, and she had said what was the final bottom for her. I just know that she said that I planted the seed. And so back to my life and my alcoholism. When I was in middle school, I went to a party, and they had beer there, and I drank for the first time, and I loved it. I loved it. It was like I was all wound up in a ball, so scared and not confident, and then I drank, and then I blossomed into this person who I always wanted to be. You know, I felt like, you know, I was funny, and, you know, the guys liked me, and I was pretty, and all of that because of the alcohol. So I remember, of course, the very first time I drank, I got caught. And my mom was in very early recovery at that time, and I remember her saying to me, you know that alcoholism is a family disease, and there is a genetic component to it, and, you know, you have a very high likelihood that you have that gene. And the only way not to get that disease rolling is to not drink. And I told my mom, oh, I hated it. Oh, it just tasted horrible. I'm never going to do that again. So right from the beginning, I was lying. Right from the beginning, I couldn't wait to do it again. And I told my mom that I hated it and I wasn't going to do it again. The second time I got drunk, my friend and I got into some moonshine. And naive, I didn't know how much you need to drink in order to get drunk. And so I drank a whole lot of moonshine. And, you know, before I knew it, I was, really, really drunk. And I was in first year of high school, I think. And you know what? There are so many times when I was drinking that I could have had some horrible consequences. I thought when I came into the program, I thought I had a really high bottom. There was a whole lot of things that didn't happen to me yet. But I look back now and I think there were a lot of things that could have happened that didn't. And, you know, somebody up there was watching out for me. Because that night, I remember riding my bike. Now, I don't quite remember. I remember riding my bike, but I must have been in the middle of the road, and it was at night, and I remember car headlights coming straight up for me and the horn going and then falling off to the side into the ditch. And there was somebody who went to high school with me that saw me and brought me home. And you know what? Second time I got drunk, I could have died. I probably came pretty close to having a head on, getting hit head on by a car. That's the second time I got drunk. Just like my mom said, things started to roll along the process of the disease, and I was starting to get consequences of my drinking. And in high school, I was a cheerleader, and I loved being a cheerleader, and I was, but I was also drinking. And there was one time we went to a school dance. I got really, really drunk, and for some stupid reason, I took the bottle of the stuff that are peppermint schnapps and put it in the trash can in the girls' bathroom at school. Stupid. They found it, and then they knew whose it was because there was only one person who was smashed at the dance. And it was a private school, and I didn't know until much later. Another circumstance that could have happened that didn't is the principal wanted to expel me from the school. And found out years later my mom just begged them not to expel me. She told the principal that, she will spiral down fast. She needs to be, she needs the stability of staying in the school. So I did, but I do remember the principal pulling me into her office. I guess this was probably one of the stipulations that I stay in the school, that I have this conference with the principal. And she said, well, that most high schoolers don't drink. And I remember thinking, that's a bunch of crap. Anybody who is anybody drinks. And if you don't, then, you are the minority, and you're not worth a whole lot. I did not believe her. I thought she was lying to me. So after that incident, my mom desperately wanted to get me in the program. She was new in sobriety, and I'm sure her sponsor was saying, don't do this, but she, pulled me into, brought some people out, and they sat with me and told their story, the whole 12-step thing. Told their story and, tried to get me to a meeting, and there was no way I was going to go to a meeting. I was not an alcoholic. And all it did, my mom's great efforts to get me in, was to make me dig my heels in more and be more rebellious, and I wasn't ready. At some point, my mom's sponsor did get through to her and said, back off. How you help her is to work your program and grow yourself, and you will be the example. And if and when she is ready, you can be there for her if she reaches out to you. So she backed off, and she never, after that thing in high school where I almost got expelled, that I didn't know I almost got expelled, but she never said anything. She was scared to death, and I can't imagine. Well, I guess I can imagine because the disease is a genetic disease, and I have kids myself. She saw me going down the road of addiction. And it got to the point where I remember, this was years and years later, I had kids, and I was at that time teaching, I think I was teaching childbirth education at that time. And coming and, you know, saying, well, okay, so I had deal, you know, I made deals with myself that, you know, first of all, okay, I'm only going to drink on the weekends, just, you know, with friends and stuff. And then it got to be, you know, more than that. And then I would make another deal with myself that, no, I won't drink during the week. And then I remember after I taught this class, I went in to the liquor store and tried to buy liquor, and my license had expired, and I didn't know it until, and so I couldn't buy the alcohol. And I was so mad. I was so mad, and it was, and there was a little spark in me at that time. I remember thinking, you know what? Somebody who doesn't have a problem with alcohol would not get so upset that during the week she couldn't get her beer. But it really, really upset me. And so there were a lot of things that I did and thought and said that made it obvious to those around me, but not me, that that I was getting deeper and deeper into the addiction. The funny thing that I never really liked pot. Whenever I got high, I would get really paranoid, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it, but I liked it. No, I didn't like when I got really high, but I liked it when I got a little bit high. And so I started smoking marijuana to chase that high, and that's what, you know, that is what made me realize that there's something wrong here. There's something drastically wrong here, because I would be high or be drunk if I didn't have weed, and then as soon as I would come down from that and be not high or drunk, then I felt I couldn't stand it. I could not live that way. And I had to live my life. In order to function, I needed to be high or drunk or something. And that little voice in me that was in my head, in my ear when I, that night when I couldn't get the beer, that voice in my head said, you know, somebody who doesn't have a problem with marijuana and alcohol wouldn't need to live their life high and feel weird when you're not high and only feel normal when they are. I said, something's wrong with that. Something's wrong with that. And we were in Michigan, and we were moving from East Lansing to Ann Arbor, and this was at my very bottom. I went into the new house, and I brought toilet paper, pot, and beer. Those were the three things that I brought to the new place. And there it was in front of me. I'm like, okay, so Cheryl, look, what are your priorities here? The first two things you bring into the new house are these two substances. And I thought, well, this is an opportunity for me. If I move here and I keep smoking and drinking, I will find that community. I will. And I didn't know anybody in Ann Arbor, but I knew that I would find that crowd if I kept going. The alternative was, this is an opportunity for me to make a clean break, get clean, and find the crowd, the community that was sober in Ann Arbor. And there was the gift that my mom gave me years and years ago. She worked her program. She turned into somebody who I respected. I enjoyed her company. I looked up to her. I asked her for advice and really, heeded her wisdom. I saw the community, the people in the program, that they were there through good times and bad, and especially bad, when things happened that were significantly difficult for my mom. That's when the community held her even tighter in their arms, and I saw that. And so I knew through her example, thank God, that I knew where to go. I knew that there was a sober community there, and it worked, and I would have people who would be there for me through thick and thin, because I had that example already, saw it in my mom. Now, as I said, it was very obvious to me the marijuana. The behavior was very obsessive, and it was obviously insane. It was very obvious to me. So after 2 weeks after we moved, I remember my heart pounding out of my chest. And I called the hotline, and I asked for the NA meetings there, and got the courage to go to an NA meeting, and afterwards, talking to the people afterwards, and this guy told me, well, this program, you not only abstain from smoking, but all substances, even alcohol. And I remember my reaction was like, oh, I can't do that. I never ever tried to stop. I guess maybe this is the difference between the alcohol and the marijuana for me. I tried to stop smoking, and I couldn't. I never tried to stop alcohol. I think there was a part of me that knew that it would be difficult and I couldn't do it. So I never tried. So when I heard this guy say, abstinence from all substances, I was shocked. And then that night I went home and got drunk. And the next day I went to another meeting, and he said, well, did you drink last night? And I said, yes. And he says, and you don't think you're an alcoholic? And that was like a slap in the face. I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe I am. And so that community referred me to Alcoholics Anonymous there in Ann Arbor, and went to my first meeting and it felt like sitting there in my first meeting, I felt like a relief weight off of my shoulders. And I remember thinking, oh, finally, I am here. There was a part of me that knew that someday I would be here in the rooms, and I made it. I've been sober ever since, and have grown, working the steps with a sponsor. At the beginning, you always start with the first step. And found a sponsor right away, and, I was struggling with, am I an alcoholic or am I not? I still wasn't sure, because I thought in my head that there were so many consequences that I didn't have this. I had such a high bottom that I didn't know that I was one of you guys. And so my sponsor said, keep going to meetings and call the subject of, call the topic first step. And I remember a couple of weeks into coming to meetings, I was at a meeting and called the first step, and there was a guy there that said, alcoholism is not a drinking disease, it's a thinking disease. And I heard that, and I said, you know what, I can accept that my thinking is insane. And so, knowing in my head that alcoholism is not a drinking disease, it's a thinking disease, I got the courage to introduce myself, heart pounding out of my chest, I'm Cheryl, I'm an alcoholic. And that was my first step into the rooms. I was always comparing myself out, and with that statement, I could compare myself in. I could relate to how these people thought. They got me, and I got them. I understood it. They talked my language. Working the steps, I was ruled by fear, and in sobriety, I didn't have substances to numb that fear out, and so it was very uncomfortable, the fear, and I was obsessed about the fear of doing the dreaded fourth step. And whenever I thought about it, I just felt like a panic attack start to come. And thank goodness my sponsor at the time, there's, different people sponsored different ways. Some are really, militant and you have to do this, you have to do that. But that wouldn't have worked for me. And my sponsor said, that's okay, Cheryl. Just keep coming back. And when it's time to do your fourth step, you'll know it. You'll know it. So I kept going to meetings, and then I found out that, gee, you know what? I can do this fourth step. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be easy, but I can do it. And looking back, it's that, my sponsor really was saying, just work the first three steps, then do the fourth step. And what happened was I found a higher power, not the God of my Catholic upbringing that I felt was judgmental, but a loving, accepting higher power that I invented. God as we understood him. So I can make my God whatever I want. And so my God was, or is, you know, has a sense of humor and tells me not to take life so seriously and is loving and accepting and forgiving. And with that, I felt safe enough to look inside. And did my first fourth step and kept coming back to meetings. Then after that hurdle of the fourth step, then the next thing that threw me into a panic was the ninth step. Oh, no, I could never do that. But I kept coming to meetings, and then after time, I again started to think about making amends. And, you know, it's not going to be easy, it's not going to be fun, but I can do it. And so, you know, then owned up to my side of the street with people in my life and made amends. And that, I think, through all of those things, work in the steps, things were happening in my life. Fear. I was ruled by fear. I think I said it before. My life revolved around alcohol and fear. And so when I was drinking in college, I remember I looked through the book with all of the different majors and found a major that interested me that didn't have math as one of the prerequisites, because I was petrified of math, that I couldn't do it, I'm not smart enough, and so I won't even try because I know that I can't do it. And as time went on, you know, that voice in me said, you know what, you can go back to school, you can take these math courses, chemistry, you know, physics, all of those hard academic subjects, and it's not going to be fun, it's not going to be easy, but you'll be okay. And so I started taking classes, and then eventually got my RN. I'm a registered nurse. I would have never been able to do that. I think I've always known that I wanted to be a nurse, but did not have the courage to do the the rigorous work of nursing school. Well, I did it, and now. You know, that is part of my life now. I would have never done before sobriety. I wouldn't have had the courage. When life happens, you know, you can be in sobriety. You can be healthy, spiritual, part of a community, but life still happens. 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer, and that was like came out of left field. I've always been somebody who's taken care of herself, exercise, eat right, and I get cancer? I felt betrayed by my body, one thing, and I was just in shock, and that was the real test for me. How strong is my program? How strong is that confidence in my higher power that, once again, it's not going to be fun, it's not going to be easy, but you can do it. Whatever happens, you're going to be okay. And that was the attitude that I had as I went through surgeries and treatment. And I am cancer-free now. And that litmus test showed me how strong my faith is in my higher power. Because I knew I was going to be okay. Even if the worst thing happened. Of course, and of course, the worst thing always happens in your head. That, you know, nothing, almost never pans out the way it goes in my head. But you know, I was going to be okay, even if that happened. And had the community of, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous holding me up, making sure I had things that I needed. They were there for me, just like I remember my mom, through good times and bad, and especially during the tough times. That's when my community really drew in and held me in their arms and helped me to get through to it. So that is the blessings of the program. And being a part of a community, having a way of living that is just a mature way to be, and so it's changed my life around, and I love my life now, and I love all you guys. Thank you.